make that call. No more bills. Don't send back the old one. Don't send him any. Starve this beast to death. I want to thank you for listening today. The Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back on Tuesday with another live show. And I want to remind you, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left.
This is the Quality News Network. Negotiations restarted today between the White House and Congress on a compromise spending bill to fund the Iraq War. Congressional Democrats appear willing to make a major concession in the Iraq War funding bill, which President Bush vetoed this week. They may drop their demand for a timeline to bring the U.S. troops home, which was the reason the president gave for his veto. The regional talks about Iraq's future have begun in Egypt. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Syria's foreign minister for the first high-level talks between the two countries in 2 years. Secretary Rice described them as professional. At the international summit, a 5-year so-called roadmap for Iraq was approved to bring security and prosperity to the country. It contains benchmarks and goals for Iraqi reforms. A U.S. military commander reports that an al-Qaeda militant believed to be involved in the kidnapping of American journalist Jill Carroll in Iraq last year has been killed. In the heavily fortified Green Zone in Baghdad yesterday, a rocket attack killed 4 U.S. government contract workers. They were from the Philippines, Nepal, and India. In southern Afghanistan today, a British NATO soldier was killed while manning a checkpoint. There are more calls from across the political spectrum for Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's resignation. A mass rally in Tel Aviv is expected to draw thousands of opponents. Earlier this week, a highly critical report was released on how he handled the war against Hezbollah last summer. The 10 Republican candidates in the 2008 presidential race will take part in their first debate today at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California. The televised debate will air on MSNBC and will be hosted by Chris Matthews. California has moved up its presidential primary to February 5th. Britain's Queen Elizabeth II will visit Jamestown to mark the 400th anniversary of the Virginia settlement. She arrived today and will address Virginia's General Assembly in Richmond. NASA astronaut Wally Schirra has died at the age of 84. He was one of the original Mercury 7 astronauts. In the San Francisco Bay Area, the freeway ramp that collapsed Sunday following a truck fire is not as badly damaged as originally thought. Engineers now say it could be reopened within 10 days. You are listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news, coming up next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
I'm putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Deadly thunderstorms have hit the Dallas region. Roads are flooded, trees are down, and 200,000 customers are out of power. In addition to delays, 40 flights were canceled at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. General Motors reported a large drop in its first quarter profit compared to a year ago. It was $62 million, which is down 90%, largely due to losses from its former home lending operation, GMAC Financial Services. Walmart announced it will enter the marketplace in India by building 75 stores there within the next decade. There may be more pet foods tainted with melamine, so pet food manufacturer Menu Foods is now expanding its recall. The company says the expansion is because of cross-contamination. According to Salary.com, the typical stay-at-home mom should earn $138,000 a year in compensation. That includes her work as a housekeeper, cook, and psychologist. Time Magazine's list of the 100 most influential people in the U.S. includes actor Leonardo DiCaprio, controversial television host Rosie O'Donnell, and actor Sacha Baron Cohen, known for his Borat character. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $63.19 a barrel. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones up in record territory, 29 points, while the NASDAQ is up 8 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The president has issued the second veto in his entire term in 6 years. The first, you may recall, was to prevent embryonic stem cell research from getting any funding from the federal government. George Bush wanted to make sure that we prioritized and placed the lives of embryos ahead of the lives of fully functioning but ill human beings. Well, now he's done it with Iraq, and he's really leading the country to a showdown between him and the Democrats in Congress as to what we should do in Iraq. Now, already there's talk of compromise on both sides, and I want to explore fully this hour. Who should compromise? Should the Democrats offer any compromise? What would a compromise be all about? What is going on in Iraq? The president says it's all about al-Qaeda. But the irony is this is a man, George Bush, and his administration who has done more to help al-Qaeda than any other man on earth, with the possible exception of Osama bin Laden. We're going to talk about that. Also, the death of really a friend to democracy. You may never have heard of her. She's Congresswoman Millender McDonald. She just died this week. And it's really too bad because she is in charge of the committee that oversees legislation that would change voting machines, that would do voting reform. I had every confidence that she was going to go full scale ahead with the bill to make sure that voting machines have a paper record. She's gone now, and that may set back efforts a little bit. I want to talk about that. There's also an Israel interesting story. There's the Winograd Commission, which looked at Israel's war in Iraq, in Lebanon, and very sharply criticized the Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert. Everyone is encouraging him to resign there, and we want to talk about those lessons from the war and also from my recent trip to Israel. I was there just last month. And it was interesting, really, to hear what people had to say and what that may say for our war in Iraq. And I want to talk about, well, the Democratic debates a little bit, or really anything you want to call in on. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK or 877-4-HEAD-ON. I want to hear from you. Let's start with the presidential veto. Now, the bill to withdraw our troops from Iraq would require them to come home from July. It would give the president a few more months if he insists, but they'd have to come home October 1st of this year. And it passed both House and Senate, and they agreed on the language and sent it up to the president for his veto. It's interesting, the bill had virtually unanimous support among the Democrats, certainly more than 95% support, and only two Republican senators and two Republican representatives agreed to vote for the bill. Iraq has truly become a partisan thing. And so, now that the president has vetoed it, there are two options. One option is being discussed in Washington and involving a number of Democrats and moderate Republicans. Set up benchmarks, do a compromise, don't put in the timetables, find something the president can sign. The other option has been very clearly defined by the Majority Leader of the Senate, Harry Reid, in deference to one of my favorite senators, Russ Feingold, certainly an independent man who's not afraid to speak his mind, the only senator, it should be noted, who voted against the Patriot Act. Well, Reid and Feingold are together on a bill that simply says this: withdraw now, Bush. When the money is gone, the troops will withdraw. And if they don't, they won't get any more money. It's a very strong bill. But the talk in Washington is that that's not the bill that's going to pass. After all, you understand that the Democrats have Bush over a barrel. I mean, the funding will run out, and it will run out in calendar year 07. There's only so much that Bush can stretch it, particularly because those mercenaries we hire are quite expensive. And when the money runs out, the troops will have to go home. So the default condition is the money runs out. And given that power, I'm not sure why the Democrats aren't simply standing firm and waiting for the money to go out. Now, they were criticized for doing that in Vietnam, and that may be what they're afraid of. There are some that argue today that we could have won the war in Vietnam, that 50,000 deaths in a dozen years or so of fighting wasn't enough. We still could win the war in Vietnam. We should still be there today, you will hear some Republicans argue. We should still be there today, even though today, frankly, it's a far freer country than it was when we occupied it 30-some-odd years ago. And maybe we could still kick out those communists in Vietnam. But they will blame the Democrats. There are people who will say, no, if the Democrats hadn't stopped the funding in 1973, Vietnam would not be communist today. Who knows? Who knows? Another $100 billion, $200 billion, $500 billion, $1 trillion down the drain. Already our next generation is going to have huge tax bills. Expect to pay twice the taxes that you're paying today. I just, finished in April paying my taxes. Well, tax bills should be double because we're not currently paying for the war in Iraq. I asked Republican Mike Lane, and you'll hear that show tomorrow, but I asked him, what would you cut to pay for the war in Iraq? You claim to be a fiscal conservative, as all Republicans claim to be, as they lie through their teeth. What would you cut? Keep the rate of growth down. It ain't enough. They want it all. They want tax cuts for the super rich, huge corporate welfare for Mobil and Exxon at the same time as they're raising oil prices, because it's summer and we're driving. Have you noticed prices going up? And they want to pay $500 billion so far wasted to continue in Iraq. And that $500 billion, what has it bought us? For the Iraqi people, certainly, they are worse off than they were under Saddam Hussein. I mean, rule under Saddam Hussein wasn't peachy keen. Life was difficult, no question about it. He was a dictator and people were tortured. But they had more electricity than they do now. They had more schools than they do now. They had better sewers than they do now. And you know what? They had far, far less violence. Now, what we saw at Virginia Tech goes on three times that amount every day in Iraq. And people are saying, we wish Saddam Hussein were still around. What's George Bush's response? Well, he blames Al-Qaeda. He blames Al-Qaeda, and to some extent he's right. There is an Al-Qaeda presence in the Sunni areas. They were invited in by several Sunnis who are scared of the Shiite government that we are propping up in Iraq. And as the civil war between them continues, we try to build walls. Walls to separate them. But Bush says it's not about civil war. No. No, it's not, he says. He says, quote, this is a speech about Iraq yesterday morning. He said, quote, for America, the decision we face in Iraq is not whether we ought to take sides in a civil war. It's whether we stay in the fight against the same international terrorist network that attacked us on 9/11. Can you say tail wag the dog? Remember, Al-Qaeda had no presence in Iraq of any significant sort prior to September 11, 2001. Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein did not get along. They did not like each other. They did not trust each other. Even today, the only successes we've had in Anbar province, I venture to say, the only reason we're having successes is not because of our brave Marines, men and women, people in the Army that are fighting there. We have brave men and women fighting everywhere throughout Iraq. But because the Sunni Iraqis themselves realize they don't want to be ruled by al-Qaeda. And that's a good thing. And they decided it on their own. But what they haven't decided is to stop the civil war against the Shiites. And the Shiites, being in the majority, heck, they're not going to stop the civil war. They'll keep shooting each other. And we'll keep staying in the middle, caught in the crossfire. If you have a comment on this or any of the other topics I've mentioned, feel free to give us a call. Toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON. Let me hear from you. 877-4-H-E-A-D-O-N. We'll be right back after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Well, let's go. Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop as George Bush valiantly tries to persuade America and the world that this is not a civil war. No, 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 no. This is really just a fight against al-Qaeda, even though there wasn't al-Qaeda in Iraq when we began, and even though the al-Qaeda presence there is still less than that in, say, Pakistan and other places around the world. Frankly, I'll tell you where it's big. On the internet. Jihad.com. One of the main ways that Al-Qaeda recruits suicide bombers and others to do their deadly deeds is on the internet. Everybody knows it. Certainly those in Homeland Security know it. Certainly we in Congress knew it when we oversaw Homeland Security. And there they have glorious videos that show people going to their deaths fighting the infidel. That would be us. They're also busy changing Islam. Now, the great majority of Muslims around the world are peaceful people. The great majority of Muslims around the world do not seek jihad, holy war, against us or anyone. But Al-Qaeda is changing that. More and more Muslims, it's sad to say, are starting to heed Al-Qaeda's message. And that is obviously a major problem. At least the global war on communism was not so much fighting an idea. Heck, most of the true believers in communism stopped believing such in the 30s, when we found out what Joe Stalin did. We were fighting a country, certainly a very powerful country, but basically a country and its allies. Now we are fighting a movement. Kind of like fighting the Nazis, actually, and that the German people truly believed in Hitler, truly believed in Nazi ideals, at least the great majority of them did. Well, increasing numbers of Muslims, and while I still strongly believe the majority are peaceful, but increasing numbers are heeding Al-Qaeda's message. What is causing that? Why are more and more Muslims, even in places that are secular and sympathetic, places like Turkey, non-Arab countries like Indonesia, why are more heeding Al-Qaeda's messages? Even the great Sunni-Shiite divide, to some extent, is going away as more people are listening to Al-Qaeda. Is it because Osama bin Laden is so persuasive? Is it because his cause is so just? Is it because people just can't wait to put bombs on their back and explode people? Is it Israel's fault? I suggest not. After all, conflict between Israel and the Arab countries has been going on for 60 years and will probably continue another 60 years, and I'm going to talk about that later in the hour. Now, I suggest that the prime cause for Al-Qaeda recruitment lies in one man, the man in charge of the United States government, Dick Cheney, our de facto president. The guy who tells George Bush what to do. And Bush, too, for allowing Cheney to tell him what to do. George Bush and Dick Cheney have done more to help Al-Qaeda than just about anyone, with the possible exception of Osama bin Laden. They help recruitment. I'm not saying they wittingly do so. I don't buy into the 9/11 conspiracy theories. I know that Bush had business relationships with people in the Osama bin Laden family. I don't believe that George Bush and Dick Cheney intentionally wanted 3,000 Americans murdered. I don't go that far. I don't have to. Let's say it's just done for oil. Let's say it's just done because some lesser people in the administration, people like Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz, truly believed at one point that we could install democracy in Iraq and it would spread throughout the Middle East, which is a wonderful idea, if only it had some basis in reality. For whatever reason, this administration is Osama bin Laden's dream. You know, after the bombing of the USS Cole, after bombing the American embassies in Kenya and Tanzania back in the 90s, we didn't see a worldwide movement to support Al-Qaeda. Of course, Bill Clinton was president then. America was not hated around the world then. Sure, some radical Muslims supported Al-Qaeda, but they were relatively few. Relatively few. And our response to 9/11 and to the bombings at USS Cole and so forth were seen as just. When Bill Clinton attacked Afghanistan, the only ones to complain were not people around the world, about the Republicans who complained that, well, he should have spent more time on Monica Lewinsky. They're the only ones that complained. And after September 11th, the world saw our response in Afghanistan as just. But then came Iraq. Then came an attack on a country that had never attacked us. And suddenly, the best recruitment tool for al-Qaeda was alive and well. Osama bin Laden praises Allah every night that George Bush and Dick Cheney are running this country. 877-4-HEAD-ON. Eric from Vermont, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
I'm doing good. You were referencing al-Qaeda and Iraq and the stability and the stuff that we've caused after we went in there and so on and so forth. And I just sort of wanted to talk about, and please interrupt as you would feel. Basically, Saddam was a bad guy, but at least there was some stability in that country with the Sunnis and the Shiites. We've gone in there. There was a program that I watched, and there was a journalist that had been living in the populace. And before we went in there, you know, not necessarily before we went there, but during the process of this internal strife that's going on between factions within Iraq, he was talking about living in the populace and that it was the faction Sunni Shiite marriages were okay, and he was
right.
Progressing through that process, and perhaps you saw the same whatever it was. And basically, over the period of the last 2 or 3 years, what he found was there is just such a division now that really wasn't there. I mean, it's been there fundamentally for the last 1,400 years, but not really quite to the degree that it is now. And
Eric, you raised some good points, and I've always felt that we need to learn from history, and I really wish that we had a president that was intelligent enough or at least caring enough about history, even recent history, because all you have to do is look at recent history in other countries, and I think you can predict what would happen in Iraq. You know, they say that those who do not remember history are doomed to repeat it. Well, all you have to do is look at recent history, and I want to talk about two countries, and you've given me a nice segue to do that, and I want to thank you for calling. One is the former Soviet Union, and the other is the former Yugoslavia. Now, both of these countries had many ethnic peoples held together by a dictator who was more or less ruthless, although they were stable countries. Certainly the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia were both stable countries, peaceful countries that had electricity and schools and so forth, but run by dictators who basically kept down ethnic tensions. When the Soviet Union broke up and when Tito died and Yugoslavia broke up, the ethnic tensions came to the fore. We see them in Russia and Chechnya. We saw them in Bosnia and in Kosovo and in Serbia. And you saw people start to kill each other. In Yugoslavia, with anarchy, at least in the Soviet Union, there was a main powerful country, Russia, and a number of smaller countries. And so Russia still sort of stayed in control. But how did they deal with it in Russia? In the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, they divided into various countries. There was Russia, and now there's Ukraine, Azerbaijan, and Armenia, and Kazakhstan, and so forth. Yugoslavia did the same thing. Now you have Slovenia and Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina and what happened in Kosovo. The difference is that and it was the same thing that Eric's talking about. Exact same thing. I mean, anyone will tell you in the former Yugoslavia, the language is Serbo-Croatian, and the distinctions between Serbs and Croats and Bosnians were minimal. I mean, the Bosnians were Muslim, the Serbs are Serbian Orthodox, and the Croats are Catholic. But in essence, they all intermarried, they all lived with each other, they spoke the same language, they got along. But then, when there was anarchy, when there was no central government, then they basically went back to the old tensions. The Serbs and the Croats had been fighting for centuries, and most recently in World War II. Now, I think all you have to do is understand how that fighting stopped. Right? I mean, there's a brutal war, Russia and Chechnya. Basically, Russia simply took over as the largest ethnic group and beat down the Chechens cruelly and to submission. And that war stopped. Not very good for the Chechens, but it did stop. In the more interesting case, I think, is the former Yugoslavia, because in that case we were involved. And in that case, a great president of the United States by the name of Bill Clinton, who frankly was a bit slow to act, and I have criticized him for that, went in with his general Wesley Clark, who I endorsed for president in 2004, the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, and without losing a single U.S. life, not a single U.S. life, three died in a plane accident, but not a single was killed. American was killed by hostile fire, managed to stop a genocide of the Serbians rounding up the Kosovos and killing them. And that time we had huge international support. We had a huge group of allies there. And we went in, and when we come back from break, I want to talk about the differences between Yugoslavia and Iraq and Vietnam, and how it is that George Bush has learned nothing from Bill Clinton, learned nothing from the lessons of Vietnam, and why it is that he is, in fact, unwittingly, I believe, the best ally Osama bin Laden ever had. Eric, I don't know if you want to stay with me for that, or if not, thank you for your call. We'll be right back if you want to call in. The toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON. We'll be right back right after this.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Let's examine what's going on with this Iraq funding issue by looking at a few fundamentals. First, Congress has the sole authority to declare war under our Constitution. It never did so formally in this instance. It did give Bush the go-ahead, though, on false premises, after Bush and Cheney heaped lie upon lie, scare upon scare. Second, Congress has the sole power of the purse under our Constitution. It has no obligation whatsoever to keep funding a war that the people don't want and that is costing us dearly. But right now, Democratic leaders are talking about compromise with the president. This would simply mean that the president can launch a war for the most bogus reasons and then keep fighting the war indefinitely, no matter how unpopular it is. Of course, Congress has one other option. Cut off the funding, except for whatever is needed to pull those troops out. If Bush vetoes such a bill, he'll run out of funds to wage this war. And sure, he'll complain about Democrats undercutting the troops even when they're saving them. But ultimately, it's up to Congress to decide whether this war is worth it or not. And the American people have already answered that one in the negative. We don't have a monarch who gets to make war without the approval of the people. We have a president who's supposed to be accountable to us. Let's make him accountable. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We were talking about the differences between Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam, and really a couple countries that I think give us a lot of insight into what's going on, the former Yugoslavia and the former Soviet Union. Now, how did we end the war? Do you remember? I mean, it really wasn't that long ago. It was less than 10 years ago. Do you remember how we ended the war in Yugoslavia? Well, in that case, it was clear that the Serbians were the aggressor. They had were rounding up Bosnian and Kosovar Muslims and killing them, kicking out the Albanian Muslim native population. And we went in there. We attacked very strongly from the air. We didn't send troops in. We attacked the electrical grid. A lot of people criticized Bill Clinton at the time, saying, how can you attack Belgrade's electrical grid, take out their lights? But in this case, you had a population, the Serbian population, that was supporting the genocide. And he basically said, well, if you're going to do that, we're going to make life difficult for you. We didn't occupy the country. We didn't occupy them at all. We simply showed the people that we weren't going to allow the genocide to continue. I would suggest that that's another way to fight in Darfur as well. But the lesson is that it's a civil war. To fight a war, you have to first recognize what you're fighting. You can't win a war if you don't know who you're fighting against. And I remember throughout the 60s, 70s, well, I wasn't around then, but I certainly remember throughout the 80s and 90s, remember what was going on in Central America? We would support some dictatorship country in Guatemala or Honduras or El Salvador, and it would have death squads against people who were trying to revolt against the government. And the people revolting against the government, they would have the support of the Soviet Union. And we would say, we can't have communists next door. We can't have these communists, the Soviet Union, on our doorstep. Not recognizing that the Soviet Union played a very small part in all of it. Sure, it funded these groups. But the real question is, why were they fighting in the first place? And they were fighting in Central America for equality, for justice, for land reform, because a few families had controlled these countries for 100 years or so. They were fighting against corporations. They were fighting for freedom. They were fighting against us and the governments we supported. And the Cold War and the fight of the Soviet Union and Cuba and all of that, while it was there, was a very minor part of the story. It was the tail, not the dog. And now, when you ask a Republican, or you can ask the president, who are we fighting in Iraq? The president says Al-Qaeda. Well, that's a joke. After all, Al-Qaeda's only there because we went there. I mean, remember Zarqawi, the so-called number two of Al-Qaeda that we killed a few months back? Zarqawi had no connection with Al-Qaeda. He was some radical Muslim living in Iraq, in the Kurdish section, as it happens, who are our friends, heard about Osama bin Laden, was fond of him, and declared himself a member. Is he Al-Qaeda? Well, he was by the time we killed him. Don't you see? We are creating more terrorists than we are killing. So when you ask a Republican, when you ask the President of the United States, who are we fighting? They will say the enemy. They will say the insurgents. They will say Al-Qaeda. They pretend. They pretend like it's the United States against some army. But it's not. No more than Central America was really about the United States and the Soviet Union, or Vietnam for that matter. No more than Yugoslavia or Russia was about the Cold War. These are people fighting each other for local reasons. And in Iraq, they're fighting each other for the same reason that they fought each other in the former Yugoslavia, because we took out the central government and there would be anarchy. And so people combine with their ethnic groups and want to be in control. And the Sunnis ran the country for 50, 100 years. They want to stay in control. The Shiites are the majority. They say we should be in control. The Kurds have never had a country and basically just want to be left alone in an independent state, which I alone, among just about anyone I talk to, have been supporting for 15 years, a separate independent Kurdish state. Because I think the lesson to be learned from Yugoslavia, from Russia, from Iraq, and yes, from Israel as well, is partition. Separate them. Live apart from each other. Let the Serbs live in one part, the Kosovars in another part, the Shiites in one part, Sunnis in another part. Give the Kurds an independent state. Maybe give them some kind of functioning autonomy. You know, in the former Soviet Union, Ukraine is a separate country, but they work closely with Russia. That's fine. That's good. That I have no problem with that. There's corruption. There's Belarus has a dictatorship. That's a problem. But once you separated them into their ethnic groups, at least they can begin to function. I mean, look at India and Pakistan. I mean, they're on the verge of nuclear war. Their hatred was so great between Hindus and Muslims. They were all in one country in the 1940s under the British India. The British left, and they fought a war, and they separated. And 26 million people had to change homes. 26 million people, Hindus, stuck in Pakistan, left their homes of generations and went to India. And Muslims in India, tens of millions left and went to Pakistan. Now, there's still 100 million Muslims in India today, and they live as a minority in that democracy. And I think India, frankly, does a pretty good job for a very poor, extremely populous country in protecting its Muslim population. I give India a lot of credit for that. I see the same situation as applying to Israel. Separate. Separate. The funny thing is, once you separate for a while, as we learned in Europe, then people can actually come back together. After the borders were strong between France and Germany and England, big enemies. I mean, I don't have to tell you all the thousand years of European wars and people dying right and left. Heck, even England and Ireland, another example. Catholics and Protestants. Once you define clear boundaries and you get both sides to sign off on them, it's the only way you have a foundation for peace. And when the sides can't agree, and they can't always agree, look at India and Pakistan, look at Israel and the Arabs, then build a wall. That's fine. So how is that different from what we're doing in Iraq? I mean, the United States is building a wall between the Shiites and the Sunnis. How is it different? Because we're imposing that solution. Because the Shiites don't want the wall and the Sunnis don't want the wall. Neither side wants it. Even though it might well be a good idea and they don't want it because it's not coming from them. This is not a Sunni-Shiite peace agreement. They don't want a peace agreement. The Sunnis think they can do better if the U.S. would just get out of their way and let them fight. And the Shiites think they could do better if the U.S. would just get out of the way and let them fight. And I don't know who's right, and I don't know who's wrong, but I do know this. They will fight each other whether we're there or not. And we can be there 10, 20, 30 years and leave, and they will still fight each other. Because we are like Tito. We are like the dictator of the Soviet Union. We are going. Whether the Democrats take us out this year or whether we have to wait until a new president is elected, they're going. We're going. The walls are coming down, and they're going to fight each other. So the right thing to do is to get them into a room and to say, look, we think the line should be here, or we think the line should be there. Let's see if we can get an agreement. Heck, you know, Bill Clinton tried in Camp David with Israel and the Arabs. He didn't succeed, but at least it made it clear that one side wanted peace, and the other side at that time, Arafat, did not. But the point is you get them in the room, and you try to get them together. And if they agree, terrific. It worked in Ireland. And if they don't agree, then you know what? It's not our battle. I am neither Sunni nor Shiite. I don't care who wins. I just want there to be peace. I do have sympathy for the Kurds. I feel we have a special relationship with them. There is no Kurdish state anywhere in the world. There are several Sunni Arab states there. There's a Persian Shiite state of Iran. The Shiites and the Sunnis have representation. They have countries around the planet. The Kurds have no one, and they've been persecuted for hundreds of years. And heck, they're pro-American, and they got oil. They also have a home for all those Iraqis who laid out their lives for America. And I feel for them. Listen, don't blame them. It's not their fault that we have an idiot George Bush that went to war in Iraq. These are people who thought back to the old way of thinking of America. And I'm not talking about Ahmed Chalabi and all the Iraqis who stole the billions of dollars. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the ordinary Iraqi who said, I want democracy, I like America, and I've learned some English, and I'll be a translator. the people who right now are being massacred right and left. One reason why I support a Kurdish home in the north is to give them a safe place to go. And I think the Kurds would do that. See, it's thinking outside the box. It's thinking creatively. There are ways out here, folks. All we have to do is look at prior history. So, you've heard my solution. An independent Kurdish state, I would move American troops up there. The Shiites and the Sunnis, I give them a deadline. October 1st? Fine. If the president would say such things, Congress could back down and we could have the flexibility that a president should have. Give them till October 1st, get them in a room, let's divide up the country. I don't care whether it's two countries. Maybe it should be, you know, autonomous provinces. Heck, it worked in Belgium. It's one single country, but the French pretty much rule themselves and the Flemish pretty much rule themselves. You know, in Serbia, they had, because of the genocide, they had to become separate countries. You get them in a room, and you don't say, oh, well, it's a democracy, and therefore we just elect people, because 60% of the country is Shiite, and the Sunnis get nothing. It's not just about majority rule. It's also about minority rights. That's why Congress is talking about insisting that Iraq have oil-sharing laws, because most of the oil isn't in the Sunni areas. Give them a share of the government. That's why they're so mad at Prime Minister Maliki, who is stopping his own government, his own forces, from attacking the Shiite terrorists. Because let's face it, Maliki ain't about stopping terrorism. He's about stopping Sunni terrorism. He's not about stopping the Shiites. He sees our American troops as a way to ensure a Shiite Iraq. And are we really letting 3,000 American men and women dead, tens of thousands wounded, $500 billion wasted, hundreds of billions more to be wasted, just so we can have a Shiite Iraq? Is that what we're fighting for? Heck, with all the danger of Iran, George Bush and Dick Cheney have not only helped al-Qaeda, they've made Iran a lot stronger. Toll-free number 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-4-H-E-A-D-O-N. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Got a few minutes left with the Mark Levine solution for Iraq. I do hear a lot of people raising the very legitimate concern in the chat room about Turkey. And it's a fair concern. I don't mean to hide the ball or to shirk the question. Unlike the president, I think we should be able to answer any hard questions. No plan is perfect, but here's my view. Yes, there are Kurds all throughout the region, not just in the former part of Iraq, but certainly large numbers, probably larger numbers, in Turkey, in Iran, and in parts of the former Soviet Union. But I think the Kurds will be happy to have an independent state, so happy that they will forswear other territory. Frankly, just as when the Jewish people were given their state, back in 1937, I don't know if you know this, but during the middle of the Holocaust, a small commission of Great Britain called the Peel Commission offered to be a Jewish state, a tiny strip of land, basically around the city of Haifa. Wasn't in Jerusalem, didn't even go all the way, included a small bit of Tel Aviv. It's a piece of land today that is smaller than the state of Rhode Island. Smaller than the state of Rhode Island. And at this time, there were, 6 million Jews, 8 million Jews in mortal danger that would have to crowd into this tiny territory. And in 1937, the Jewish Agency, representing the great majority of the Jewish people, said yes. We'll take it. We'll take anything. Our people are in danger of being murdered. We will take anything. If we have to fit 8 million people in territory smaller than Rhode Island, we will do it. The Arabs refused to give that tiny strip of land, which was almost entirely Jewish. There were virtually no Arabs living in this tiny little area. It was a very small piece of land. Britain said no and turned all the immigrants trying to escape the Holocaust back over to the Nazis. Indeed, I think we can lay at least 2 million of the 6 million deaths right there at Great Britain's feet. The Jews were willing to take it. I think the Kurds would too. That doesn't mean they wouldn't like more territory, and if they were attacked, might respond self-defensively and get more. But I think they would take it, and I think that Turkey, which after all has a huge swath of Kurdish territory in the eastern sections, would love a treaty with a newly independent Kurdish state to say that the borders are inviolate. It worked between Germany and Poland. Listen, about a third of Poland today used to be Germany. And yes, millions of Volksdeutsch had to leave Poland and go back to the center part of Germany, leaving their homes where they'd been for hundreds of years. But they signed the treaty and is now accepted, the Oderness line there. I think that if Turkey got a treaty by an independent Kurdistan recognizing Turkey's eastern boundary, giving up Kurdish independent claims and maybe encouraging, I think in a treaty you could have things like some Kurdish autonomy in villages, maybe teaching Kurdish in the schools. I mean, Turkey has its own problems. I recognize that. Some of them we've seen in the press this week. But they are a stable, secular, democratic state where the majority of people are Muslim. It can happen. It does happen. Turkey is a great ally. It's a friend of NATO. It has its own history, as the heck Germany does, of genocide. But I think with a strong president, we could get Turkey to accept this. I really do. I think it just takes some negotiation. It would actually really end a real problem there. Dave from Eureka has been waiting a long time. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, I came on a little earlier, so I'm taking you back a bit. But I think we're generally in agreement, Mark, that the whole involvement in Iraq is based completely on lies, distortions. And it is, for some PNAC group, extremely profitable. They're making a lot of money, and that money is being shared with some of our politicians.
I did a wonderful show a few months back that's still on the web at RadioInsideScoop.com on the secret Iraqi oil law, and I want to urge everyone to take a look at that. It's also a video. You can get it there. But you're absolutely right. Corporations are making huge profits off of this.
So there's no honorable reason for us being there. We should be out, and we should impeach the people that brought us into this war for their own personal profits. That's saying it.
Well, the problem, Dave, is while I agree with you, you know, you need a majority of Americans to impeach, and you need two-thirds of the Senate to convict, and we just don't have that. So I'm looking at really ways out, trying to think of creative solutions to Iraq, recognizing that, yes, we got in there on lies. Yes, we got in there based on greed. Yes, the president keeps lying to us. But at some point, with the Democrats in control, we have to say what we would do, and that's why I wanted to give my answer. But certainly I agree with you. It's just a matter of convincing everybody else.
I think too many of our Democrats are also having their hand out to Lockheed Martin and Halliburton and whatever.
Well, that may be true. I'll tell you, Reid is standing firm. He's standing with Feingold. It's very good. Pelosi, I'm not so sure. I want to see where the House goes. They're talking a lot about compromise, but, you know, we'll see when something hits the fan who's on whose side. I hope the Democrats stand firm, and I just don't know where they're going to go here, but they are in the constitutional driver's seat, and they should remain that way.
Okay.
But before I close, I just want to talk. Thank you for your call, Dave. I appreciate it. Before I close, I only have a few minutes left. I want to talk a little bit about my trip to Israel and what's going on there. There is wide criticism in Israel of the Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. Indeed, his approval rating. You think Cheney's is low in the teens? Ehud Olmert's approval rating is 3%, and that's within the 5% margin of error. No one seems to like what he's doing. People on the left say Israel should never have gone to war in Lebanon. They weren't ready. People on the right say he should have finished the job. Well, now there's been a commission, the Winograd Commission, which has scathingly attacked Prime Minister Olmert. Oh, that we had such democratic commissions in the United States, who were willing to scathingly attack our president. Can you imagine if we had as much of a democracy as Israel does, where people are willing to loudly say that the president is wrong? Well, they have attacked him pretty fiercely, and I think it may be time for him to resign. But the lessons of that commission are very interesting. Basically what they say is even when war is justified, as it was in Israel by the kidnapping of the Israeli soldiers and the missiles that are still being sent by the Hezbollah and Hamas from Gaza into Israeli cities. Even when war is completely just, you have to be ready to fight it. You have to have a plan. You have to know what to do. You have to have an army that's ready. You have to be sure you're going to win. If you're not sure you're going to win, then you really shouldn't be fighting. Maybe there was another way. Maybe Israel could have sent in commandos to free the hostages who are still in Hezbollah and Hamas. Maybe there could have been more diplomatic options. The United Nations had passed 3 resolutions to disarm Hezbollah, 1559 and 1680 before the war, 1701 after the war. And Hezbollah is completely ignoring those resolutions. Syria is arming them, trying to intervene in the democratically elected Lebanese government. I have no question about who's right here, but it's not a question always about being right. It's also a question about being smart. And the Winograd Commission made it very clear that even when you're right about a war, you got to be smart about it. And that's why I think Prime Minister Olmert is not long for this, leaving his country, and that is the way democracy should work. One last thing about democracy. You got to have the right to vote and got to have the right that your votes be counted. I've always been a long supporter of paper records and getting rid of those Diebold machines. Congresswoman Juanita Millender McDonald also was such a supporter. She was, in fact, the only African-American woman to lead a committee. She was head of the House Committee on the Committee on House Administration that looked into and controlled voting issues. She is now gone, and that need to replace that position very quickly. Very quickly. We've got to get that voting bill up and ready for the next election. So Pelosi's got a lot on her plate. That's all for the Inside Scoop today. Tune in tomorrow when I debate Republican Mike Lane on all of these issues, and you can listen to him hem and haw as he tries to defend the Bush administration. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The regional talks about Iraq's future have begun in Egypt. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Syria's foreign minister for the first high-level talks between the two countries in 2 years. Secretary Rice described them as professional. At the International Summit, a 5-year so-called roadmap for Iraq was approved to bring security and prosperity to the country. It contains benchmarks and goals for Iraqi reforms. Negotiations restarted today between the White House and Congress on a compromise spending bill to fund the Iraq War. Congressional Democrats appear willing to make a major concession in the Iraq War funding bill, which President Bush vetoed this week. They may drop their demand for a timeline to bring the U.S. troops home, which was the reason the president gave for his veto. A U.S. military commander reports that an al-Qaeda militant believed to be involved in the kidnapping of American journalist Jill Carroll in Iraq last year has been killed. In the heavily fortified Green Zone in Baghdad yesterday, a rocket attack killed 4 U.S. government contract workers. They were from the Philippines, Nepal, and India. In southern Afghanistan today, a British NATO soldier was killed while manning a checkpoint. There are more calls from across the political spectrum for Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's resignation. A mass rally in Tel Aviv drew thousands of opponents. Earlier this week, a highly critical report was released on how he handled the war against Hezbollah last summer. The 10 Republican candidates in the 2008 presidential race will take part in their first debate today at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California. The televised debate will air on MSNBC and will be hosted by Chris Matthews. Britain's Queen Elizabeth II will visit Jamestown to mark the 400th anniversary of the Virginia settlement. She arrived today and addressed Virginia's General Assembly in Richmond. NASA astronaut Wally Schirra has died at the age of 84. He was one of the original Mercury 7 astronauts. He was also the